Welcome to Living Your Soul's Journey with Dr. Vicki. I am so grateful to be here with you tonight. We discuss issues to help you walk your soul's pilgrimage in your own authentic way. Sharing the path with your angels and spiritual guides gives you the comfort and security of always knowing you are not alone. You are invited to visit my website at livingyoursoulsjourney.com and fill out the Freedom to Be Me journal, a place of self-discovery. The show airs every Sunday night on BBS Radio at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern. Call in or just listen during our inspirational discussions from guests around the world and from Dr. Vicki, a counselor of law and spirituality. And now, Living Your Soul's Journey. Welcome this evening to Living Your Soul's Journey. I'm Dr. Vicki. I am very blessed this evening to have a wonderful, wonderful numerologist and author on. His name is Richard Andrew King. And one of the reasons why I wanted Richard on, and he's been on the show before, is that one of my greatest, or I should say all of my greatest challenges in this lifetime have been as a parent. And in all, looking back on it now that I'm older than dirt, you know, everything's turned out to be a gift. But at the time, those were some of my biggest struggles in life. And when several years ago, when I read Richard Andrew King's Parenting Wisdom, What to Teach the Children, I was like, you know, there's a lot of common sense in this. It's like Mr. King did not write this from a intellectual viewpoint, meaning what I mean by that is in theory that he'd never been a parent or anything. He's actually a parent and a grandparent, a martial arts instructor. And so he's come from his own personal wisdom as well as understanding the numerology of parenting as well. So welcome, Richard Andrew King. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, Dr. Vicki, and hi to your listeners. And if you're older than dirt, I'm older than mud, dear, because I'm older than you, so.
Well, my viewpoint on that is that I was probably, my soul's been here longer than dirt, long before the earth, so that's all kind of where I get that viewpoint, so. But on this planet, I am quite mature, experienced, I should say. So it's quite well. So I'm excited tonight. Now, Richard, we're going to talk about parenting wisdom and what to teach the children. Now, just as an introduction, there in your book, which you can get on Amazon, correct?
Yes, this particular book, all my non-numerology books are available in Kindle as well as paperback. And they'll be under my author name, Richard Andrew King.
Good. Well, in one of the, and then just in understanding, so folks will know what we're approaching here, you have set up a book, or written a book, I should say, setting up 33 principles of parenting. And what we're going to do is over a 5 or 6 weeks, depends on how much we get, you know, in progress, but we're each month at depending on the schedule, and we'll let you know the schedule, we're going to be discussing, like this week, we're going to be discussing 5 of those chapters or principles of what to teach your children. And in your case, you know, if some of y'all out there don't have children, they're grown, then you have grandchildren, but you may have cousins, you may have nieces and nephews. So, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a real parent in the sense of having a 10-year-old, you still in some way are a parent, even if you're a teacher. So, I mean, this can apply to so many aspects of our lives. So, correct, Richard?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
So you're a granddaddy, and
yes,
but you're still a dad.
Still a dad and granddad. I've got 4 and 1 in the oven coming in 8 weeks.
Oh my God! And you've not chosen to have a young wife, so you don't have any in your oven. So, but you're talking about in your child's oven, right?
And yes. Thank you very much. In my child's oven, my second daughter is on her 3rd. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no.
That's
I had two is enough.
Yeah, you have to understand, I've been painting the deck all day, so I'm a little giddy tonight, so I just can't help it. I know that my house is about to sell, so I'm just all excited about getting it all spiffed up. So now let's get into the first aspect of what you talk about, a divine reality. And I know what that means to me, but what does that mean to you when you're talking about parenting?
Well, I think as far as I'm concerned, and I'd like your audience to understand that all I'm doing is sharing ideas which I have used that work for me. I'm not trying to tell anybody how to raise their kids. All of us who are parents have our own ways of doing things. So I'm not trying to say that anybody's wrong, but I have taught, just to give you a little background about me, I have three brothers, two of which I helped babysit when they were growing up. But when I was in high school, I also had a booming babysitting business when we lived in Las Vegas, believe it or not. And that was quite lucrative for me because the parents would go out and gamble on the weekends and they'd need somebody to babysit. So I started getting a lot of work with young children there. When I went to college, I worked my way through as a recreation leader. So I had years of experience there. And my degree is in English. I have a BA there. And then my postgraduate studies were in education. I have a lifetime standard secondary credential in education. And then my martial art business, I've been teaching since 1979, and I've taught thousands of kids. So my background really is about the common sense approach, not necessarily an academic approach. And I have seen, the reason I wrote this book is because I have seen parents do some things that I would have done otherwise. And I think the principles that we're going to talk about can really help parents hone in on some of the things that I believe are important, and I think they would too. The first one, and we're going to mention, talk about five today, and the first one is a divine reality, which we'll discuss. The second one is a man's worth is only worth what his word's worth. Number three is balance is primary. Number four, be a living example for your children. And number five is better to have a gold character than a gold medal. Those are the first five in the book. We're going to take them sequentially, 1 through 33, as we do this series. So, okay. Now, a divine reality. This is an understanding to children that there is a power that is bigger than we are. None of us made ourselves. And if children can understand through us as parents that there is, you can call it God, you can call it source, you can call it spirit, they can move their mind and their consciousness beyond their own egos. And I find this very important because if we're part of something bigger, then we don't tend to be as self-absorbed and egocentric as we would be otherwise. And children can become that way in thinking that the whole world revolves around them, when in effect, we revolve around this center force we call God. Whether somebody is religious or spiritual or they have a scientific background, it doesn't matter as long as they understand that this power exists. For example, Sir Isaac Newton, who I'm sure many of your listeners know of, lived in the 17th century. He is arguably the greatest scientist that ever lived. And he said, in the absence of any other proof, the thumb alone would convince me of God's existence. And so when we look at his understanding as a scientist, we begin to think that there's more here than just what comes out of a religious text. Albert Einstein, who was the greatest scientist of the 20th century, said this: everyone who is seriously involved in the pursuit of science becomes convinced that a spirit is manifest in the laws of the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man, and one in the face of which we, with our modest powers, must feel humble. So even Einstein understood this concept of a divine power. And I can tell you, through my numerology work of 36 years now, that when we see the connection between our birth names and birth dates and the events and relationships of our lives, there is no way we cannot make the connection that there is a massive intelligence far greater than what we have that created everything. Because we can take anybody's name and birth date and erect an entire numerology chart and outline so much of their destiny. That could only happen if there is a God or a power greater than us. And for anyone who's carrying the notion that God doesn't exist or who is an atheist, I would recommend that they start studying the King's numerology, and through that they will see that through their own charts, that there are things in there that were destined, that it can only happen through a greater power. And so whether it's God, source, whatever, that's where I think we should begin with it with our children.
I want to say one thing too, Rich, is that when we're having children, is to always listen to our children, because they may believe in angels. They may see and have a connection to spirit that we may see differently, but we need to allow them also to be able to express that without being judged for, no, it has to be this way. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, some children are very, very, very connected to spirit, but maybe a little differently than their parents are connected as in their religion. So I think it's very important in that divine reality to allow a child to express their divine connection without there judgment.
Yes. And I think I don't know if it was on your show, have I talked about the reincarnation experience that my older daughter had?
No, but I want to hear it, because I'm a strong believer in reincarnation. Please share.
Okay. So for those people who have had children, my daughter at this time when this event happened was 2 years and 9 months old. So I'm at my karate studio. I'm laying down on the couch. It's a Sunday. I'm reading a book. And she says in her sweet little child voice, "Daddy, can I read a book?" And I said, "Sure." So she went over to the bookshelf. Of course, she couldn't read. She was too young. But she picked up a book and she brought it back and she sat down beside me. And then a few minutes later, Vicki, I heard this. I heard this tapping. And then she said her exact words, and I'll never forget this, because she's 37 now, so this was decades ago. She said, "Oh, Daddy, look, a picture of Khrushchev." Well, Khrushchev, of course, was the premier of the Soviet Union back in the 60s. And I looked down at her and I said, "Krista, what did you say?" And she said, "Look, Daddy, a picture of Khrushchev." Mm-hmm. Whoa, my gosh. And it wasn't a picture of Khrushchev. It was a picture of Max Heindel, who was an astrologer at the first half of the 20th century, and that she had to pick up his astrology book out of my cabinet. So over the course of the next few minutes, I asked her to tell me about Khrushchev. Well, she said, "No, Daddy, I don't want to." So over the next few days and weeks, I would query her, "Honey, tell me about Khrushchev," when she was relaxed. And she said, "Oh, yeah, Daddy." I said, "Where did you live?" She said, "We used to live in a place that had animals made out of stone." I said, "Like statues in Moscow or whatever." And I said, "Well, what did you and Khrushchev do?" She said, "Oh, Daddy, we used to sit on the bed and we would talk for hours at a time." I thought that was quite interesting.
Oh, yes.
And then I said, "Well, did you live anywhere else?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, Daddy, we used to live out in the country." Just matter of fact like that. "Oh, yeah, we used to live out in the country. It used to snow there." Now, this was a girl who was born in Southern California, so she had never seen snow in her life. She's not even 3, remember. And so, wow, I said, "That's amazing." This is the last question I asked her. I said, "Well, when you were out in the country and it was snowing, what did you wear?" She said, "Well, we wore big furry hats and big furry gloves."
Wow, that's about as Russian as you can get.
That's about as Russian as you can get. And then a few years ago, I was on the web doing some research, because this has always been interesting to me. Khrushchev had quite a few children. There was this one paragraph from a man who went to visit Moscow, and he was looking at Khrushchev's grave. Next to his grave was a daughter named Yelena. Now, this daughter is a mysterious daughter. Not too many people knew about her. Yelena, on her tombstone, died on the 14th of July in 1972, I believe it was. my daughter was born, Krista, on the 14th of July in 1978, 6 years to the day after Yelena had passed on. So that was as real as it gets. So that's sort of like the spiritual sort of thing. There is this power. She knows of this story. She can't remember anything now. She's too old, but she remembers me telling it. She could probably repeat it verbatim, but it was exactly how it happened.
And see, that's what I want to validate, that, because for all the listeners that are, if your child comes to you with a reincarnation story or seeing things or seeing angels or whatever, validate that. Because that is part of their divine reality. And if you had stopped that in your daughter, Rich, it could have affected her whole life.
Well, I don't know that it would have done that. It could have, but it would have pulled the curtain down over her and closed her off from expressing herself to me and,
sure,
and what we went on before. And, of course, I'm a big believer in reincarnation. So when a child is born, one of my granddaughters, I ask her what she was in another life. So I'm always querying them to see if they have these recalls before they lose it as they get too involved with this particular incarnation. So that,
well, that's fascinating. We both have Russian children then. That's,
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's fascinating. Well, so I think that that's a very good understanding of a divine reality that we need to give to our children. And it's going to really tie in to the fourth principle that you're going to share in a minute. But talk to me a little bit about what meaning what you say and valuing what you put out there. Man's worth is only worth what his words are worth. I mean, talk to us about, I know what that means to me, because it's I call it integrity.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Well, it's part of integrity for sure. Mm-hmm. And for your listeners, I'm not 20 years old, obviously. Frankly, I'm pushing 70, getting up there. But in my business experience, and I've been in business pretty much most of my life and self-employed for decades, over 40 decades, what I tend to assess in people is if their actions match their words. Anybody can say anything. Talk is cheap. You hear that all the time. But it's true, and a lot of people just talk. But when a man's words match his actions, then you can trust that person. And what is, and I'm sure all your listeners understand this, what is the number one ingredient that keeps all relationships together? What is that?
What's trust. That? That's, well, for me, it's trust.
No, yeah. For every, yes, everybody. Yeah. And as soon as the trust is gone, there is no relationship, or at least it's going to be sorely influenced in a negative way. So in my raising of my children, and even with my martial arts students, now I've taught my martial arts students all these things as well. And many of these are a crossover in my book, The Black Belt Book of Life. I talk about many of these same things. But it's important that when you say something to somebody, you follow through. I can't tell you how many times, I'd be a billionaire by now if I had a dime for everybody, every time somebody said, well, yeah, I'll do this and I'll do that. And then they didn't follow through. I make note of those things because to me, my worth is based on my word. And if I tell somebody something, damn it, I'm going to make sure I'm going to do it. And for example, one of my friends said, Rich, when you say you're going to walk across the street at 3 o'clock tomorrow, you're going to walk across the street at 3 o'clock tomorrow. You're not going to walk across at 2:58 or 3:01. You're going to walk across the street at 3 o'clock. That's how he perceived me. But that's how I like to be, because I just believe so strongly that if we violate our words to people, then we lose the trust and they don't trust us. And then what do we have? We are really worth less. For example, let's say somebody calls you and they say, man, I need some help this weekend. Can you please come over and help me? And the person says, yeah, I'll come over and help you. I'll be there for sure. Just count on it. And then you hang up the phone. And the day before, this person calls you and says, hey, you know, Vicky, I can't, something came up and I just can't make it. But you've already made plans. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, what came up? Well, I really don't want to discuss it. Well, then you find out that this person decided, well, somebody offered tickets to me to go to a basketball game or a football game or this or that. I had the chance to do this or that. So they reneged on you. They reneged on their promise. And then you go, well, boy, that person's not trustworthy. And there are people in my life who have done that to me. I just don't trust them ever again. Sometimes I'll give them two, maybe three strikes. But after that, I cut the chains. I'll still be friendly to them, but I won't trust them. And in business, as anyone knows, business is all about relationships, and those relationships are all about trust. And when the trust is gone, there is no relationship. So children need to get this in their heads really early on. And one of the things parents can do is make sure when they're teaching their children that they always honor their word. Don't let their kids say something and then do something else. Make them own up to what they're saying so they can develop this habit of keeping their word. And tell them, this is important for you to do that. You know, a lot of people in our culture judge their worth by their financial status, their social status, their celebrity status, their intellectual status, anything but their character status. And that is, however, the most important thing to do. And when you lose that, you've lost everything. When we can buy anything we want, but we're going to lose our money, we're going to lose everything when we die. What will go with us is the energy that we create, and that character trait of keeping your word and having the worth that your worth brings is absolutely critical, in my estimation, to raising substantive, happy, whole children.
Well, I want to share something about that, because I, having a 16-year-old daughter, you know, it's a very good example of that is in driving, because I tell her to be safe. I tell her to do this. I tell her to do that, you know, as far as driving etiquette. And yet when I'm behind the wheel, if I'm not doing exactly what I'm telling her, boy, does she catch me. She'll say, you're not keeping a far enough distance. You tell me to keep a distance. You need to keep a distance. And instead of getting upset with her, which a lot of parents will say, you know, listen, you know, don't worry about how I do it. But I thank her for that. And I always think that we should teach our children to let them know that we're not, you know, superhuman. We're human too, but to thank them when they do say something about, but mom, but you do that. And you say, wow, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I'll do better because I want you to do better. And I mean, that's how we do our life, Rich, because when I see something in my own behavior, I can see it in my daughter. And if it's good, it's fabulous. If it's not, it really wakes me up. And I say, you know what? I need to do better on that. And so I think it's parents need to understand that they can also learn from their kids on this too. You know what I'm saying by that. So,
yes. And that goes to the fourth principle we were going to talk about. We can talk about it now if you want to, or we can, sure. we can back up stuff.
Yeah,
here.
Let's go ahead. I'll be a living example. Yeah. I saw that in Divine Reality too. That kind of goes through everything.
All of this is really, when you get down to it, this whole book is about character.
Mm-hmm.
But I've tried to break it down into little segments so people can understand it a little better. Albert Schweitzer, many people may not have heard of, especially if they're younger. Albert Schweitzer was one of the greatest philanthropists of the 19th and 20th centuries. He was a world-class organist. He was a medical doctor. He also had a PhD in theology. He said that when he was 30, he was going to stop playing the organ and he was going to devote the rest of his life to mankind, which he actually did. And he won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1952. He went down to Africa. He started a colony down there to help people in that part of the world. This is his statement, and it's absolutely priceless. He says, example is not the main thing in influencing others. It is the only thing. And as parents, that is exactly the crux of how we can raise our children better, I think. Because let's face it, any parent who loves their child wants their child to succeed. And the children are going to copy their parents, and like your daughter catches you and so on and so forth. If our children see hypocrisy in us, they're going to disbelieve us. I remember when I grew up in my world at that time, and it was pretty common actually in that generation. My parents kept repeating, "Don't do as I do as I say."
Right. Well, oh, yes.
That is a tragic formula for failure, because children are bright. They see the hypocrisy, and we cannot afford as parents to be hypocritical. So if we want our children to grow up well, then we have to monitor our own selves and be a living example, not just a mouthing example of what it's to be. Now, we all make mistakes. None of us is perfect. So if we make a mistake, then we do as you did. We explain to our child, "Thank you very much for catching that. I'm sorry. I messed up. This was a problem. I'll try not to do it again." And then they can see us owning up to our own mistakes, which is one of the principles, grown-ups own up, which we'll talk about in another section. But it's very important for us to be a living example. If we, for example, I want my children to be healthy, it's very important to me that I therefore live my life by healthful standards. I'm a vegetarian. I don't drink, smoke, I've never done drugs. I exercise regularly. And I don't preach that to my children. We talk about it, but I try to live it. So when they see me working out, that will sink into them. Now, they may drink wine. They have their own lives. I do not press my viewpoints onto them. I've never done that as a father. I've let my children find their way, but I try to be the living example of what I think it's important for them to be for their own health and well-being, and for my grandkids, and also for my martial arts students.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to go back to the, you know, your worth, what's your worth, your words, right. Because it's a valuable, as a child, I mean, as a mother of a child who is very forthright, and I want to relate this to women especially, because we have a lot of women listeners. When we as Southern women are growing up, and you may not know about all this, Rich, I'm sure you do, but we are told to say what is needed to make someone accept us, be acceptable. And in living your soul's journey, one of the issues that I talk about is being true to yourself. Absolutely. And I think as a parent, to keep your worth valuable, you've got to value yourself. And I see this a lot with parents seeing their children as the what they want them to be, but yet they don't love themselves enough, which goes back to that divine reality, having that strong connection. They don't value themselves enough to have self-worth, so their words are not worthwhile because they're not honest. They're mm-hmm. saying what they need to say to be accepted, except, you know, what they're expected to say. And I know I spent years, Rich, just learning to be honest with myself, because as a child, I always saw, and I still do it. I mean, I'm very comforting to myself, but I'm very also confronting, you know, I confront it because I see my daughter as a little Leo and an Aries, and you know what her numbers are and all that. She just says it like it is. I mean, she just says it like it is. And it has been the greatest gift, because I tend to just say what I have to say to be sociable. And I think this has a lot to do with owning what your words are, so that you do have a value to what you're saying. So these children say, you know what? What she says, she really means. Not what she says is what she's expected to say.
Right. And I'm going to draw from my English background one of my favorite quotes from Shakespeare, who I believe is the greatest writer of all time, especially a playwright. He said, "This above all, to thine own self be true. And it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man." We really do need to be independent in our own thoughts and not worry about what others think about us. It's better that people not like us, but trust us in my opinion. I'd rather somebody trust me. I don't care if they like me or not. And there will be people who don't like any of us. So people who revere us, who like us, who love us, and then there'll be people who just don't like us for whatever reason. That's just the way life is because of different energies. But if we always are truthful and honest with people, then whether they, one of my fiercest enemies in my life always told me, said, "Rich, I can always trust you. I may not like you, but I know you've never lied to me." I'll take that. I'll take that every day of my life because it's important trust, because once that's broken, you can't get it back. You know, I spend a lot of time with horses in my life, and horses understand relationship really well.
Yes.
And the number one thing with horses is trust. Once you gain a horse's trust, they'll do anything. And you, the person would have to break that trust. But if you break it, you may never get that trust back again, because horses intrinsically understand that trust is the basis of all relationship. Unfortunately, humans do not understand that. Humans, and you think about it, how many people are selling their souls or whatever, lying, cheating, deceiving other people, and they don't care about their true worth because they're just trying to gain the system and get what they can materially in this lifetime. Little do they know that their energies of who they are going to follow them into their next life, the next experience, or whatever that is. So if a person develops their integrity in this lifetime, that will go with them. But all of the money, all the fame, all the fortune, all of that will not go. As Guru Nanak said, it was a saint of the 15th and 16th centuries, ranks of this world will not be recognized in the next. So why spend a whole lifetime lying, cheating, stealing, trying to get wealthy, famous, or whatever, when you're going to lose all that? To me, it's better that children understand this idea of worth so that those energies will follow them into their next lifetime and
yes,
beyond.
I think it's just valuable because, I see so many women, Rich, that don't have a lot of self-worth. And so, how are they going to teach their children if they're not really, it's a valuable chapter that you have here in your book, a valuable principle, because the self-worth, the words that we speak come from our own value. And it's taken me a long, long, long time to get over that Southern tradition of saying what you have to say. It's sort of like there's an old saying in the South that, like, if you'll say something about somebody's outfit and you'll say, "Oh my goodness, that outfit looks so lovely. I remember you in that outfit 20 years ago. It just still looks nice on you." And so they have this way of making you feel like they've said something nice to you, but they've just slammed you. So it's been a challenge for me because I've had to, and my daughter, by the way, doesn't put up with that. I mean, she sees through everything. And so she's been the greatest gift that I've ever had because I just speak it now. I speak the truth for me now. And it's been very, very self-empowering. So I love this about what you say, because it's, you got to come from within. I mean, it's not, you can't just say what you need to say. It's like a friend of my daughter's drives real fast. And she laughed and she said, but mom, his mom drives fast. So when she says something to the son says, "Yeah, I drive fast." And Anya said to the mother, "Yeah, but it's because you drive fast."
So there you go.
She said, "Oh, no, I don't drive fast. He drives fast." So I thought, well, there goes that conversation. So mm-hmm. It's like, it was very interesting to me because I feel this is a very valuable subject. Now, do you know a lot of people from the South, Rich?
Ma'am, I have family from the South. That's where my roots are. I understand that. You betcha I do.
So you do. You understand how that southernness can get a little fussy in there.
Well, it can be real charming. You know how that is. But, you know. But the thing with worth, though, I'd like to go back to this worth. I think if somebody lacks worth, and this, since you talk about women, I think it applies to men. But here's the thing. We usually judge our self-worth externally by what society tells us our worth is. You know what? Every one of us is a child of God, of this divine energy. By that alone, we have worth. We do not need anyone else to validate us. And too often, we allow society, oh, are you successful? Do you have money? Oh, you're not very worthy of anything. Are you kidding? That's a material concept. That's somebody else's validation. We need to just learn to be centered within ourselves and not worry about what anybody else thinks of us. And this can be difficult, but that's where we need to get. And when we get to that point, understanding by knowing that because we're attached to this divine source, we're fine. Doesn't mean we're perfect yet, but we don't need other people to validate us. Our worth is good just because we exist. And I must say, so many people, you know, each of us is our numbers. Each of us has our own destiny, our own energetic makeup. We need to honor that and not try to be like somebody else, because we can't be like anybody else. Every one of us is our own individual snowflake. But you see people trying to be like a celebrity or be this person or that person. But no, we need to honor who we are and value that. And I think that's one of the great lessons of studying your own numerology chart and your own destiny. Be who you are.
Yeah, and I'm about to have my new chart done. I'm so excited. Okay, now, balance. I want to talk about balance because, to me, that is just key to life. I mean, keeping a balance, but there's discernment in that. So talk to us a little bit about what you mean by balance.
Well, there is. I'm always telling my martial arts students and my children. In fact, I've gotten to the point where I won't even say anything anymore. What I'll do is just hold up my hands, put my thumbs together, turn my palms out, touch my index fingers, and make a triangle. That triangle represents Aristotle's golden mean, which is all about balance. And my message to them is balance is primary. I say that over and over again. Martial arts is life, but life is about balance. But life is not, balance is not a passive activity. It is very active. For example, try to stand on one leg, just balance on one leg for any length of time. Even if you have a good sense of balance, you may be able to stand on one leg for 3 or 4 minutes, maybe 5 or 6. But after that, your legs, your hip, your quads all start getting very tired. And you realize that this takes work to stay balanced. And here's the thing. People can tell you, oh, be balanced, be balanced. Well, as an instructor, as a teacher, that's telling people what to do, but it's not telling them how to do it. Here is how you keep your balance. Let's say that you are teaching, and let me back up. What I'm trying to do with these balance exercises is help children understand that balance is the foundation of everything in their life, not just martial arts. But I'll play this game. If you want to be balanced, you have to understand this is a relationship, if you're going to stand on one leg, for example, between your head, your shoulders, your hip, your knee, and your foot. And once you set your alignments, you will be balanced. But if your alignments are off, you will not be balanced. So to me, it doesn't do any good to say just be balanced. As a teacher, you have to tell people how to be, and that's how you do it. Balance is an alignment issue. So in life, we have lots of things we have to balance. We have our family life we have to balance. We have our work life. We have our emotional self, our financial self, our psychological selves, our sexual selves. All of those have got to be kept in balance. And if that balance is off, there are going to be problems. Just like a teeter-totter. If we stand at the fulcrum, we've got a good chance to keep that teeter-totter steady. But if we're on the very ends and we're going up and down, we're always going to be out of balance. And once we're out of balance, we have trouble. Think of a tightrope walker, 1,000 feet in the air. So you're 1,000 feet up, and maybe you have a balancing stick with you, like this guy who, Linda family, who walked across Niagara Falls and is doing all these fantastic feats, right? Scary. You never get me up there. But that's his profession. But I would guarantee you that he's concentrating on his alignments, because if he loses his concentration, and concentration is the first key to being balanced, then he could easily die. And any of us can go off the mark. For example, if you go to a party. And I tell this to my teenage, I told it to my daughters, and I tell it to my teenage students that are going off to college or even going into high school. If you start drinking alcohol and you become imbalanced and you get in your car and you go out and kill somebody, you're going to wreck your life for the rest of your life in that moment because you lost sight that you were out of balance. I don't drink. I don't want that poison in my body because of that. For other reasons, too. I don't like alcohol in my system. But when we drink, we put ourselves in a precarious situation. How many girls actually go to college and they start drinking and they start doing things, and guys, too, that are untoward? Maybe they get too sexual because they can't think properly because their minds are imbalanced because of the poison of that alcohol. Then the next thing you know, they get raped, they have children, they have all these kinds of issues. That is a balance issue. So to me, it's vital that in life we stay balanced and we keep all these perspectives in alignment. As Pope John Paul said, man always travels along precipices. His truest obligation is to keep his balance. There was a Greek playwright named Euripides, and he said, the best and safest thing is to keep a balance in your life. Acknowledge the great powers around us and in us. If you can do that and live that way, you are really a wise man. And then there's this anonymous quote that says this, anyone can teeter-totter, but not everyone can balance. And I would submit to you, if most of America or most of the people of the world had a sense of balance, we would not have the problems, so many of the problems that we have today because of that, the imbalance that creates that.
Well, and I want to share one thing, too, that, you know, you even mentioned it in your book, with money, a situation with money. When we give our children money,
yeah, right.
Whether,
right.
Yeah, or for an allowance, like, okay, for instance, my daughter's my assistant. She travels with me when I have to do closings and I have to print the documents on the road. And so I give her, for her contribution, I give her a salary. Or,
sure.
You know,
right.
But yet when she goes out to spend, she doesn't want to use it. And so I always tell her, you know, but yet you're earning your money. So I will pay for things, for household things. But when it comes for your items, you have to pay for those yourself because you're a working girl. And it lets them earn their own money so that they learn the value of it. And she'll say, oh, I don't really want that now. So, you know, she starts to learn. And you talk about an allowance in your book, helping them to learn and to save. See, if I give her money, I always take 10% of it, Rich, and I put it in her savings.
Uh-huh.
So
I think what you should do is let her do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, okay, it's your money. You need to go put that in there. And just, I wouldn't take it. Myself, I wouldn't take it from her. I would make sure she did it so she gets used to doing it. Because
that's a good idea. Yeah.
As a martial art instructor, I have a different view of parenting. I always want to protect my kids. But I will not always be there to protect them, obviously, once they become adults, even when they're teenagers. So what I've tried to do is make them strong and independent and whole and harmonious and substantive so they can protect themselves through the knowledge that they've earned growing up. Now, as far as allowance goes, if a child, and I think this is very important, if they take their allowance and they spend it and then they want something, and then they go to mom or dad and they say, hey, can I have some more money? My response is no. I gave you that. That was your money. And then they may start throwing it a fit or a temper. Well, that's just too bad. And it's okay to let them hurt at that time. Too many parents, I think, give in to their children. I've seen it over and over again. And when we constantly give in to our children, beginning from age 2 on, they will have us wrapped around their little finger, and they will never learn to take responsibility for their own lives. One of the phrases that we'll talk about in previous coming weeks is your life, your responsibility. And that teaches them if they want their money, they have to manage their money. They have to balance their needs versus their wants. Most people say, well, what I want is what I need, not necessarily. How many people may have $100 and say, well, I want to go spend this money on a concert or a football game or something like that, when they've got bills to pay. And so they don't understand the financial aspect of balance. Yet I don't spend what I don't have. And that's how a lot of people get into too much debt. Sometimes we have to, you know, use the old credit card. But generally, it's best to not have that, as far as I'm concerned, to stay balanced financially. And you know what? When we look at America, unfortunately, there is an obesity problem. And this, to me, is a lack. It's not a judgment. It's an observation. It is a lack of balance between calories in and calories out. It is a taking, but it's not a giving back to the earth or to yourself to keep yourself balanced. And when you are that imbalanced, now you come up with diseases and things like that, make it very difficult to get around. And then you've got medical bills and so on and so forth. So then we come back again to the point of balance. Calories in, calories out, and whatever it is, but balance is primary.
Well, one thing I want to mention too, because I know we have one more chapter, is the Facebook situation or Twitter or whatever. I think too, a lot of kids, now my daughter's not one of them, but there are, because we've had long talks about it, but these kids sit here, and I've watched them, and I know some of them, is they sit in front of Facebook or Twitter or whatever the different names are, and they're sitting there with, you know, all these little chips and God knows Cokes and whatever, and they think they're socializing, Rich, because they have 500 friends, have never met them in their whole life, and they could be pedophiles and they could be murderers, but they're friends. So they feel self-worth, which is tying in all of this whole first chapters that we're talked about. They feel like they have self-worth. They feel like they're being loved, and yet they're sitting there and they're not exercising. They're not out there playing basketball or swimming or whatever they could be doing, and they're just playing on these games, and they're on Facebook all day long, some of them. And that's affecting their balance as well, because like you say, they're going to get obese. They, you know, have all these other issues from it. So I have a little soapbox on that, because I see too many kids doing it.
Well, my kids were raised in an era, in a generation before all the cell phone eras. But if I had children today, I would take those and say, nope, they're mine now. We're going to do something else, or you're going to do homework, or you're going to read or something. I would not allow my children. Here's the deal. Children are children. They are not adults. They do not have the experience, the age, the wisdom to make appropriate decisions. I've taught over 3,300 people in my martial art career. Most of those have been children. And here's what happens. If you give a child an option to make the wise choice or the easy choice, every time, 100% of the time, a child will make the easy choice. It is up for parents to make the hard choice. Our job as parents is not to be buddies with our children, in my mind. I told my kids when they were young, look, I'm not your buddy, I'm your dad. And when you're adults and you're mature enough, we can have a buddy, a friend relationship, but right now, it's not going to happen. My responsibility is to make sure that you grow to be responsible and so on and so forth. So I have to make decisions. And sometimes those decisions can be difficult from the child's point of view. But that's how it has to be. We have to take charge as parents, be the leader, be the living example, and show the way forth. That's why we're the parents. That's why we're supposed to be the adults. But I have seen parents say, oh, my child is my best friend. No, your child is your child. When they become an adult, they can be your best friend. But parents have an obligation to help that child grow to be strong. And they can't be strong if they're being pampered. They can't be strong if they always know that they have somebody to hang on to. For example, you know, when a child is learning to walk, a lot of times they'll fall down and a parent will run to that child every time and pamper them. Oh, you okay? Are you? No, you know what? My philosophy is that parent, that child falls down, let them fall down. Let them learn what it's like to land on their head or their noggin or their bum and get back up and go again, because that's real life. And nowadays, we have children in college, you know, the Yale student who was throwing a massive temper tantrum because a costume at Halloween offended her. My God, this is a child whose parents pampered her, I will bet you, all her life growing up. and made her feel safe. There is no safe zone in this world. Children have got to learn to be strong. They've got to learn to stand up on their own. Let them fall down as long as they're not, you know, have to be shipped to a hospital or something, taken to a hospital to fix an injury. Let them experience not having the money because they spent it. Let them experience what it's like to fall down and make those experiences, have those experiences while they're young, when they do have parents and a household. Because once they get out in the world, they're going to have problems if they don't know how to handle their own lives.
Oh, that's so true. Now, talking about handling your own life, if you have character, which is going to come from within, but also how the parents work with you, it's better to have a gold character than a gold medal. And I love that chapter. We don't have a whole lot of time to talk about it, but basically what you're saying is that the character is key here. And keeping your word, all of the chapters that we've talked about, balance and all that has to do with character. Do you want to share something specifically on this?
Well, we grow up in a society that we're in. And people, when they aspire to be something, it's usually always about achievement and success in the material world. Having money, having fame, having properties and lands and wealth and celebrity and university degrees and trophies and gold medals. But how often do you hear somebody say that their aspiration is to have a pure character? We look at, frankly, our politicians. Look at people and how many sports celebrities and movie celebrities and singers, how many of them aspire to be great in their field, but their character is like it's not even there. But yet it is the character that creates the trust. It is the character that creates the worth. So in my mind, it's character always trumps everything else.
That's why I love Carrie Underwood so much. I'm going to put a plug in here for her. She sings the best of anybody in the whole wide world. She's a country singer. For those that know her, I can't imagine anybody not knowing her. But she's got character. I don't care what she believes in. All I know is that she's got character. I mean, and I just think she's got the whole 100% of everything because she's got that character. She treats people well. She treats herself well. I mean, she's just, to me, a living example of someone who is, you know, a celebrity, but has character.
And unfortunately, there are very few, right? Here are some quotes. This one's from Saint Sawan Singh, who was a saint of the 19th and 20th centuries. And he said, "The first essential step to a spiritual life is character. One may deceive one's friends, relatives, and even oneself, but the power within is not deceived." Eleanor Roosevelt, who was wife, of course, of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, said, "Only a man's character is the real criterion of worth." Basically, of course, character is based on virtue, and that is the amalgam of our moral and ethical principles. And if we lose that, then if we have no character, we really have no worth. Very important to have character first before anything. And I tell my martial arts students, character must precede prowess. In other words, you can be a great fighter. You can have great skill in whatever you do, but the character must trump that. It must come first. It must always come first. And there's a story I tell my youngest daughter, who was a great soccer stud, and God bless this girl. She is so humble. But I repeat the story of Gordie Howe giving an award to who's that great hockey player? Help me. Somebody's giving me the answer through the phone. I'm sure.
Doug.
What's the name?
Doug.
The greatest hockey player of all time.
Oh, I don't know, Doug. Doug, are you speaking?
Doug's not listening.
We have 90 seconds, okay. Much longer. I want to talk about what we're going to talk about, but go ahead and finish the story. Don't worry about his name.
No, well, that's right. I want to get his name and we'll do it.
Well, I just want to.
Wayne Gretzky.
Oh,
Wayne
Gretzky. Good. Okay. Go ahead and finish it if you can real briefly because
Donald said we only have 90 seconds.
Yeah, we do. Well, I just want to thank you for coming on. Next month, we're going to be talking about boundaries and competence and, you know, kind of hesitating before you rush in. So we got a lot of things to talk about. And what I would recommend for everyone is to go buy Parenting Wisdom, What to Teach the Children by Richard Andrew King. So the next time we talk in a month, Richard, maybe some of these folks will have your book. So I want to thank you for being on the show. I want to thank everybody for listening in to Living Your Soul's Journey. We will be back next Sunday, 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern. And until then, we'll have you back in a month, right, Richard?
Yes, ma'am. And thank you very much for having me. And thank your listeners for tuning in. I appreciate it. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. And we will definitely let you know in the next couple of weeks which Sunday that Richard Andrew King will be back. And I want to thank everyone tonight. And I just want to remind you to be thankful for something in your life, many things in your life. Just be in gratitude, because it will turn your life around and it will make your living your soul's journey so much easier, and it just makes life better. So thank you very much for listening, being here with us, Richard, and good night.